Back to the Bald-Faced Truth with John Canzano on 750 The Game.
What a field we got in the Final Four. You can hear part of the Final Four action coming up this weekend on 750 The Game and 750thegame.com, starting with the Owls and Aztecs, FAU, San Diego State. It's a beautiful mess, but I do like to focus on the beauty. You got UConn and Miami on the other side. Good friend of the program, friend of us here in Portland, and alumni himself of 750 The Game, now doing great work. Podcast prolific extraordinaire. It is Greg Peterson at GUnit underscore 81 with Vegas Stats and Information Network. What's up, Greg? How you doing? How's Vegas?
Vegas is nice. It was a little bit rainy today. Big giant upset out here in Las Vegas. The fact that we got a little bit of rain, but all in all, we're doing terrific. How about you?
I had that at like plus 330, Greg, but I didn't play it. I would have cashed something nice.
Low odds, by the way, because typically it would be much, much higher.
Lay it out for the people. How many podcasts are you doing, and at what pace? Because this is my favorite thing about you, is how unrelenting you are with the content.
Well, now we're up to pretty much three shows a day. We've got the Baseball Betting Show with Greg Peterson, which that is coming back midnight Pacific, 3 a.m. Eastern, daily, taking a look at baseball. Coast to Coast Hoops, that is the college basketball podcast. That is every single day. The last time I missed an episode was November of 2019. And then you got the Greg Peterson Experience on VSiN. That is pretty much, if you're out here on the West Coast, much like we are, that is Sunday through Thursday. So we do 14 podcasts a week and 5 3-hour shows a week. So 19 in total.
A little bit different from our days doing the Pacific Rim College Basketball Podcast on 750 The Game.
A little bit, but you know what? That was a great podcast that we did, and I still remember we had Oregon going to the Final Four that year, and gosh darn it, they did it.
They did it, and that clip popped up the other day, Greg. The Jordan Bell failing to box out at the end of the Carolina game lives with us forever. Oh, but you're right. You and I both had Oregon go to the Final Four that year, and we got to have that on the record and had that loud and proud. So this Final Four, man, do you have anybody in your Final Four that made it? Did you have a UConn? What do you make of it?
I did have UConn in the Final Four. One more Final Four team than both, so I will take what I can get, because everyone's bracket got completely destroyed this year. So if you feel bad about your bracket, have no fear, because even the best of us, we went down in a fire heap. I thought Arizona was going to win it all this year, and, well, that didn't last very long. But I do think that it's a very interesting Final Four, and the team that I did pick to make the Final Four, UConn, I just think it's so hard to not set them as a big favorite to be able to win it all. They've got a little bit of everything. They've got really good rebounding. They've got guys that are able to knock down threes, and I'm sure many of your listeners know they might have been at some of those games. Out in Portland, they, at the time, were looking like the best team in all of college basketball, and there's been a lot of stretches this year where they've shown that through. They hit a little bit of a rut in mid to late January in conference play, but past that, this has been legitimately one of the top teams in all of college basketball, and they were the one team where I really wasn't surprised that they've been able to make the run that they have.
The other teams trying to challenge them. You got San Diego State, you got Miami, you got FAU. Now, you are very familiar with the lines and the spreads and, of course, the odds to win. You know, let me know what you're seeing on your end as well. But UConn around minus 120 or minus 125. San Diego State,
in that neighborhood, yep.
San Diego State plus 390. You got Miami plus 500 and FAU, the longest shot at plus 600. Where is the value with any of these other three teams trying to take down UConn?
If you really think that there's going to be a team that takes down UConn, you probably would just want to be putting a little bit on the money line rather than a future. And you just take the winnings that you get from that first win and you put it on the second one, you'd actually get a little bit of a better payout. But I just think that with UConn, they should be north of 50% to be able to win this. I really couldn't vouch for picking any of these other three teams because I do think that UConn is that dominant. I do think that they deserve that credence. And it's a bunch that they just come at you in waves because they've got two of everything. When Adama Sanogo's not out there on the floor, you've got Donovan Clingan. You've got so many great guards. When you don't have out there on the floor Tristan Newton, Joey Calcaterra, who spent a lot of time on the West Coast for UC, for San Diego, he's able to come in and pop some threes. So as much as you want to be able to take a little bit of a long shot, you can't take a long shot unless if there's value there. And I think the real value is just UConn being able to get the job done.
Where could they stub their toe the most? Is it the Miami semifinal or a potential Aztecs or Owls winner?
I honestly think that Florida Atlantic would probably pose the biggest issue because Florida Atlantic is the next most well-rounded team in the field. Florida Atlantic has really good depth, and what I do like about Florida Atlantic is they're a bit of a chameleon. If you're looking to play fast, they're going to be able to play at your style. If you're looking to play slow, they're able to play at that style as well. And this is just an absolutely earth-shattering stat about what we've been seeing here in postseason play. Do you know what the record is for Conference USA teams right now? Because we're going to be seeing a pair of them out in lovely Las Vegas for the NIT final. 17-1.
That's
Conference
wild.
USA teams between the CBI, NIT, and NCAA tournament are 17-1. And the one reason why I do think that this is the case is because Conference USA has the biggest melting pot of teams. You've got the slowest team in all of college basketball in North Texas. You've got Rice and UAB, two of the fastest teams in all of college basketball. I think the fact that it set this conference up for so much success this year, whereas, oh, I don't know, the Big Ten, where everyone plays the exact same style like it's 1982, they don't set themselves up for success because right when they see a different style, they have no idea how to handle it.
Yeah, that's coming from a Wisconsin guy in Greg Peterson over here. So
and the Big Ten deserves all the flack that they are getting, and then some.
Question for you on a similar note. We see Fairleigh Dickinson do this thing that we saw, you know, UMBC do a couple years back. Are you buying into the fact that we're going to see more 16-1s now that we've seen two in the last, you know, 5 years or so? Or is that a bit of an overreaction?
I think that this was just a product of Purdue not necessarily being the world's greatest team, and I do think that the Big Ten needs to look itself in the mirror and decide, you know what, we need to have teams step out a little bit more and play a bit of a different style. But what I think is really happening that is causing all these upsets, the fifth-year COVID year, along with the transfer portal. A lot of people thought that with transfers, that it was just a lot of guys going up to a higher level and then seeing a bunch of minutes, when in reality, what has happened is these guys that they're playing at these Power 5 schools, they're not seeing a lot of minutes. They go down a level, and then all of a sudden, they really emerge. Like Braden Pogbeski, he was the star player at Santa Clara this last year. He couldn't get off the bench at Illinois last year. He goes to Santa Clara. He goes out for like 20 points a game. We see so many of these guys. And I think that that is really what is impacting a lot of these teams because a lot of the powers like UConn, like Kentucky, like Duke, they go for guys that they're going to be spending 1 or 2 years in college and then they leave. Whereas with San Diego State, with Florida Atlantic, with these smaller schools, you've got guys that are willing to stick around for that fifth year that they've been granted due to the pandemic. And because they're sticking around longer, it gives them more experience that allows them to be able to build more and more chemistry. And I do think that the COVID year, coupled with guys going from Power 5 schools and transferring down a level, has led to more and more upsets. And I think we can continue to see this until the COVID year runs out.
Greg Peterson from Vegas Stats and Information Network joining us on the Bald-Faced Truth. You obviously spent some time up here with us in Portland. We covered Ducks and Beavs basketball. Have you been seeing some of the chirping around Oregon basketball in the last week or so, most specifically Dana Altman, after the loss to Wisconsin in the NIT quarterfinals, kind of calling out the fans not showing up at Matthew Knight Arena, and just the state of the Ducks program in general from your vantage point, Greg, under Dana Altman, who's obviously a proven coach, but they've kind of hit a little, a couple years of a malaise here. How do you see the Ducks right now fitting into the landscape of college basketball, and is there an obvious path forward for them?
I did catch some of those comments, for one, and two, I guarantee you, had Oregon won that game, they would not have gotten shut out the final 9 minutes and 8 seconds yesterday. We can give Oregon that, but
wow,
it has been a little bit strange for the Oregon Ducks, just because what Oregon was really doing a great job of 5 years ago is that they were one of the few teams that were really masters of the transfer portal. Now a lot of teams have really caught on, so what was the bread and butter for Oregon? They were really doing what a lot of teams weren't. Now darn near all of these teams are doing that, and what I think is really key for Oregon is just keeping these guys on campus a little bit more, because Khalil Ware was a very highly touted guy. He's now in the transfer portal, and I think that Dana Altman needs to find a little bit more of a true identity, because what I've noticed with Oregon is that Dana Altman, to his credit, he always blends himself a little bit to the roster that he has, but now he sort of has a situation where things are sort of hit or miss. Part of it was due to the fact that there were quite a few injuries for Oregon this year. There's no question about it. Like, that NIT loss that we saw to Wisconsin, Oregon very nearly won that game without each other top three scorers. Not a lot of teams would be able to hang in a game like that with each other top three scorers out of the fold. That's actually a little bit of a credit to Dana Altman. But at the same time, I do think that what is big for the Oregon Ducks is just trying to develop a little bit more, because we are seeing a lot of these top-flight recruits deciding after a year or two, like Khalil Ware, that they're going to be playing elsewhere. And I think that that's really the big key for them, gaining a little bit more chemistry, because now they are going to be losing what has really been a guy that was Mr. Oregon basketball for quite a long time, and Will Richardson. And I did feel like they put the ball in his hands perhaps a little bit too much, because we saw his turnover numbers way up this year.
Yeah, and out here we're pretty high on Jackson Shellstad coming up out of West Lynn. He'll be on campus in Eugene in the fall, and he'll be the next freshman sensation, hopefully, for Duck fans to spearhead things under Dana Altman.
Maybe he could be Peyton Pritchard 2.0. That would be nice.
He didn't win 4 state titles in a row in high school, but he is the next iteration of the West Lynn prodigy going down to Eugene. That is for sure. And yes, that would be nice. What about the Beavers, Greg? The bottom fell out of a team that went to the Elite Eight magically. Is there any path forward to relevance for the Beavers, the way you see things with Wayne Tinkle?
Now, as sad as it sounds, they got more wins than a lot of people thought they were going to this year. Part of that is because Cal was the biggest dumpster fire I think we've ever seen. How Mark Fox had a job going into this year, I mean, you tell me, because I have absolutely no idea. And congratulations to them on getting Mark Madsen. That's actually a really good hire. So that's going to help out the Pac-12 as a whole. But the big thing for Oregon State is they need to find some sort of rebounding, because they lost a lot of their top forwards just very late in the transfer portal / in the process in general, because there were a few guys that they were sort of banking on, and they decided that they were going to be going elsewhere, or they decided that they were not going to play for the team in general, because Lorenzo Atiche is the guy that I thought was going to be the top rebounder for the team. Towards the very late in the process, he just decided that he was going to be going pro. And I think what is really key is building from within, because you actually saw a little bit of upside when it came to the backcourt this year. Someone like a Jordan Pope was actually relatively okay for Oregon State, and to the credit of Wayne Tinkle, he does a good job of developing guards. They didn't have a single guy averaging north of 4.5 rebounds per game. That is the issue for the team, and it has been the issue for Oregon State for the last few years. Having Olatiche was able to be a nice deodorant for that the last few years, but I think what Oregon State needs to do is they need to build from within, they need to look in the transfer portal, and just find someone, anyone, that's able to give them some size, give them some rebounding. That's a big fast forward, because in the Pac-12, it really has become a little bit more of a defense-oriented conference.
We talk a lot about how the Pac-12 is going to look as a football conference once USC and UCLA leave. How's it going to look as a basketball conference, Greg?
If they're able to get San Diego State, it's not going to be looking too bad. If they don't get San Diego State, it might be a little bit rough, because Oregon has the best pedigree of all the teams that are going to be remaining in college basketball. And I'm sorry, I'm going to poo-poo the fact that Washington State, I think they made the national title game in like 1940. We're not going to go back quite that far with regards to college basketball pedigree. Obviously, you've got Arizona still in the fold as well. They're the last Pac-12 team to be able to win a title. But I do think that it is going to be a little bit rough, and you've got to wonder if the Pac-12 is going to be looking at San Diego State, which I'm sure that there are rumors of that, or maybe taking a look at the West Coast Conference and deciding, you know what? We are going to have some of these teams that they're going to be playing just basketball for us. I think that that would be a good path forward for them because they've got more than enough when it comes to the football side of things. Losing USC and UCLA is going to be a little bit rough, but I mean, Oregon and Oregon State have proven themselves in recent years to be rock-solid football programs. No doubt with Oregon, it's always been there. Oregon State, it's been more the last few years. So I think that they're fine on the football front, but with basketball, I think that it would be very wise for them to decide, you know what, we're going to become the first of these power conferences to let a few teams just play basketball and basketball only within our conference, and we will be very happy to welcome any team like a Gonzaga.
Greg Peterson joining us for a moment more on the Bald-Faced Truth. Newbie in for Canzano. Shifting back to the Final Four landscape, Greg, and we were talking about UConn laying some juice as a favorite before the games even start. And minus 125, minus 130, it speaks for itself. Can you contextualize for us, like, how different is that when you have, of the four teams coming into Final Four weekend, one is not just the slim favorite, but a clear favorite and land a number like 125 or 130. Has that happened before? Is that more frequent than I'm thinking right now? Or how different is that?
That's really not too much different because keep in mind 2 years ago, the same thing was there with Gonzaga. Gonzaga was that very clear number one. Baylor was that clear number two. But in that title game, the spread was Gonzaga being right around about a 5 to a 6 point favorite, which if you're looking at the individual spread right now on UConn versus Miami, Miami is about a 5.5 point underdog. So this actually isn't as uncommon as it has been in the past. Had the Zion Williamson team for Duke actually been able to make the Final Four, because you may recall they lost in the Elite Eight, they probably would have been a relatively sizable favorite as well. So this is something that it does happen quite a bit from time to time, and I would say it happens once every 3, maybe 4 years, give or take a little bit like that, where you do have a clear favorite like UConn. So I wouldn't say that this is necessarily the strangest thing in the world, but at the same time, it probably is a little bit more demonstrative than most years, and it's just a strange year in college basketball because, I mean, you mentioned it. We had a 16 seed and a 15 seed win in the round of 64 in the NCAA tournament. We have all 1 through 3 seeds that are on the fold, and it's par for the course for a UConn year in which they make the Final Four, because you may recall last time they won a title, they beat an 8 seed in the title game in Kentucky, and then when they won it with Kemba Walker in 2011, they were the 3 seed, and I think that they were the top seed in that Final Four as well.
As for the spreads themselves, UConn laying 5.5 to Miami, San Diego State -2 to Florida Atlantic. I got to say, that's the game I'm more excited about, San Diego State and FAU, even though it's similar styles. What do you think of each of those spreads? Is there anything you like there?
I would be willing to lay up to 5.5 with UConn. I set them as a 6-point favorite personally. I think that this is relatively on par, but I do think that with UConn, they just have too much rebounding. No Chad Omier does a good job down low for Miami, but you've got just so many guys. Adama Sanogo, you've got Donovan Klingon, Andre Jackson, so much depth there. They just come at you with waves. It's just too much for Miami to overcome down low, in my opinion. Miami, 198th in the country and points a lot on a per-possession basis. That just does not cut it when you're trying to win a national title. You know, I do think that the other team from Florida is going to get to the national title game. I like Florida Atlantic. San Diego State has a more dominant defense, but we've seen with San Diego State, the offense has been very suspect here in the NCAA tournament, and for San Diego State, they're going to be doing for some negative regression. Across their 2 games against Alabama and Creighton in the Elite Eight and the Sweet 16, they shot a combined 5 of 44 from 3-point range their opponents did. This is a really good San Diego State 3-point shooting defense. Not even the Monstars allow only 5 of 44 from 3-point range. That is going to be going upward a little bit. And for Florida Atlantic, I do think that because they've played so many fast, so many slow teams, they've had to play so many varieties of styles, that they are going to be able to overcome this. So I'd like Florida Atlantic to be able to get the job done outright as an underdog. I'd like UConn to take care of business against Miami.
All right, we'll get you out on this. I know you do a lot of baseball content for your baseball podcast as well. Opening day tomorrow. Mariners, what? What are we looking at? World Series futures. I saw 17-1 earlier today. I think I'm seeing 18-1 on some sites as well. What do you think of a Mariners flyer to win the World Series this year?
Now, do I think that they should be the favorite to win the World Series? No, but if you're getting the numbers that you're throwing out there, which I'm mostly seeing right around 16-18-1, depending upon what book you are utilizing. It's not a bad book. This is a really young team. They've got, in my opinion, a top three just overall, top to bottom pitching lineup in all the big leagues. They've got a really good bullpen. I like the way that Logan Gilbert, George Kirby looked in the offseason. And by the way, do not sleep on George Kirby. He should be getting more attention than he's gotten. This kid has been a really good pitcher for this Miami Marlins team. And I do think that as long as Robbie Ray is not coming out of the bullpen to face off against Yordan Alvarez, I have no idea what the thought process was on that one. But, I mean, he should be rock solid as well. I think that this is a Mariners team. That's no doubt. They're not going to be able to overcome the Astros in that division, even with the Astros ailments. But I do think that they're a top three, top four team in the American League. And getting right around 15+1 on your money for the Seattle Mariners, that's a milestone we call value.
Hope springs eternal this time of year, Greg. So appreciate you fanning the flames. That's what we like to hear. It's good to catch up with you again, my friend. Thanks for taking the time. And enjoy Final Four weekend and Championship Monday.
Absolutely will do. And you do so as well, Judith. Always appreciate you.
You are the man, Greg Peterson. The Greg Peterson Experience. And he's on Twitter at GUnit_81. Greg and I go back a few years, and of course he was a staffer here at the station for a while before going down to Vegas, and, you know, he is cut out of a different cloth, but that dude never stops cutting. Like, he never stops. He has no off button with his content. It's crazy, and it works. It's really worked for him, so it's great to catch up with Greg. We'll go away. We'll come back. We'll break some of that down. We'll also give away another pair of tickets to the Nike Hoop Summit. More of the Bald-Faced Truth up next on the Bald-Faced Truth Radio Network.